Welcome to In His Footsteps with award-winning author Margaret Agard, sharing practical tips for living a joy-filled life and amazing interviews with people who do. Now here's Margaret.
Have you noticed one of the problems for people who went to prison but want to turn around their life is that they find it hard to get a job because of that record? Bert Smith came up with one possible solution to that. And today you're going to meet Bert Smith, hear about that solution, and how you might be able to get involved.
Now here's this week's Bible question and answer, brought to you by the Amazing Bible Timeline. Quickly see 6,000 years of Bible and world history together on one color-coded wall poster. Find out more about the Amazing Bible Timeline or ask your own Bible question at AmazingBibleTimeline.com.
This week's Bible question, does the Bible say a woman has to cover her head in church? In 1 Corinthians 11, it speaks about a woman being covered in service and that her long hair suffices as a covering. But David wrote to ask if the Mosaic law required it. That's an interesting question. Did the Torah or Old Testament have the command that a woman or man was to cover his or her head during prayer or while out? No, actually it's found in the Talmud, which is like an addition or interpretation of law. It's considered tradition, not law. Now you'll meet Bert Smith, who talks today about how people who've been in prison can resolve one of those problems they've had, which is how to find a job when you get out of prison when you have a record. How else are you going to turn your life around if you can't find a job? And how he got involved with this organization and how you might consider getting involved with such an organization yourself here in West Virginia. Because after all, the fewer people we have who are breaking the laws, the safer we all are. All right, so let's start. What actually is it that the Prison Entrepreneurship Program does?
Well, Prison Entrepreneurship Program is an unusual, if not unique, nonprofit serving the serving convicted felons in facilitating their transformation in as they progress through the last bit of time in prison and continuing to walk with them post release.
You start working with them when they're in prison, and then you keep working with them when they get out.
Yes, and that's very important. We think it's one of the reasons why we've been able to be more effective than many ministries and social service organizations. We start and working very intensively with the guys up to about 2 years prior to their release, and we continue to walk with the same group of men, if they'll have us, post-release.
Right.
Not many other organizations do that.
They're one or the other is what it comes down to.
Correct.
Where are you located?
We have offices in Houston and Dallas, Texas. We recruit men from all over the state of Texas, 60-something different units that house male convicted felons. But those men who are selected for our program, whom we select for our program, are all transferred by the state to a single unit, which is just outside Houston.
And how do you select them?
We are looking for men whom we believe are genuinely committed to living a new life. That's a very difficult thing to assess, but we use staff and current participants who are in our program. And most of the staff involved in that process are also graduates of our program. We do have it's a series of steps, the selection process. It involves both interview and application, so that the men who want to be considered have to exert some effort. First of all, they have to raise their hand and say, yes, I'm interested. Secondly, they have to attend a little orientation session. They have to complete a multi-page application, and they have to go through a series of interviews. So it requires some initiative, and that in and of itself is a bit of a screening technique that we use.
Sure, because if they go to that effort, they're showing some true interest. How about the ones who can't read or write?
Well, they wouldn't be able to complete the application. So, in effect, literacy is a requirement of the program. And our academic, the academic portion of our program is pretty intensive. Most of the men that come through have a high school diploma or a GED. A few have some college or associate's degree courses. Very few have actually obtained a certificate from either a two-year or a four-year college. So for the main, we're dealing with men typically that have a GED, perhaps a high school education. You know, the level or degree of literacy or proficiency, I should say, varies quite widely. Our core curriculum is actually based on a college-level textbook and college-level writing requirement. So it's very difficult and very intensive for the men. And again, that's a conscious decision on our part. This is tough. It's like a boot camp.
So you want to actually see them make an effort, and real effort, not I just show up for my Jesus meeting. What kind of coursework is this?
The core curriculum on the business side is about entrepreneurship. We use, as I said, a college-level textbook. They have a chapter a week that we study over a period of about 16 weeks. And during that time, they are also responsible for conceiving of a business that they will start upon release. They research that business. They write a complete business plan. They develop financial forecasts, budgets, and financial pro formas to support their plan. And then they will present and defend that plan before a number of executive volunteers over the course of approximately a six-month period.
Which is how you got involved. You were an executive volunteer at one point.
Exactly. I was asked to come in and help provide feedback for these plans as they were being developed.
Now, it seems that a lot of these men might have been in the business of selling drugs at one point, so they actually probably understand the concepts of the business.
There are a lot of the basic business concepts that they're very familiar with. Sales, margin, collections, working capital even. I mean, it's not difficult to help them understand how those same principles apply in an honest, free world business.
What kinds of business ideas?
I should also say that a big part of our curriculum also focused on character assessment and development. And in fact, for about 3 to 4 months before we start the intensive business plan portion of the program, the men are involved in that character assessment and development process, and that continues throughout their involvement with PEP.
When you say character assessment, is it a self-assessment?
I beg your pardon?
Is that a self-assessment?
It's a combination of self and peer assessment and ongoing evaluation. We use a 360 review process that is very intense. In many cases, the men tell me that it's the first time in their lives they've ever been asked to assess themselves and then subject themselves to comments and feedback from peers.
So they might say, you know, I'm a pretty laid-back, easygoing guy, and their peers are saying, not quite.
Right. That's right.
I'm interested in their business plans. What kind of businesses do they usually think about starting? Before you answer that, let me just give people who are just tuning in a little information. This is Margaret Agard with In His Footsteps. Today, you're meeting Bert Smith of PEP, Prisoner Entrepreneurship Program, who shares one way to help men who got out of prison and are having a hard time getting a job because they have a record, find a way to support themselves and their families.
most of the businesses that they start will be service businesses that require fairly limited startup capital.
Right.
Examples would be, we have a number of guys who come out and start businesses related to construction trades, like painting contractors or electrical contractors, roofing, general repair, and those sorts of things. But we have actually a very interesting and wide variety of businesses in total. We've had several guys start businesses related to auto parts sales and distribution. One of those businesses did over $1 million in revenue last year.
Without having a chop shop?
Yeah, no, this is not a chop shop. There are a couple of different businesses that are sourcing specialty parts for RVs and customized vehicles.
Oh, sure.
We have one guy who runs a commercial printing operation. He will probably do $500,000 to $1 million in revenue this year. We have several moving companies. One of them was featured recently on a Fox News broadcast about PEP, a company called Moved by Love, based in Houston, Texas, with a name which we all love. And so, you know, a pretty wide variety of businesses.
How successful are you with, let's say, rehabilitating these men? How many men actually get out and start a business? Or how many get out and find a job?
You know, the premise of the program was that nobody would hire these guys once they get out, and that's why recidivism is so high. Pew Charitable Trust found in a study they did 10 or so years ago that something like 89% of men who are reincarcerated, who recidivate, are unemployed at the time of their second arrest on their reincarceration. Well, that just frankly just documents what most of us would understand by common sense. What we have found is that by really empowering these men with a sense, an appreciation for the owner's perspective and a sense of what is required to run a successful business, they actually become very employable. So
when they've learned how I'm going to start my own business, what's going to be important to me, they've talked to guys who maybe had a business one way or the other, whether it was illegal or illegal, and then they realize, you know, I'm not just there to collect a paycheck. I'm there to be on this guy's side, whoever, or woman's side, whoever has this business they're working for.
Exactly. So in just about 8 years, around 800 men have graduated from my program, and about 700 of those men have been released. From that population, something over 100 businesses have been formed so far, most of those in the last 3 or 4 years. In other words, they were out for a few, 1, 2, 3 years before they started their business. In the meantime, almost all of the guys are able to find work. In the last 6 quarters, we have been able to help every one of our released graduates find work within 90 days of release.
So what's your recidivism rate?
Employment.
So 100% employment. This is great. And what is your recidivism rate?
Just under 5% based on our latest three-year look. In other words, we track men for 3 years post-release, and we report that information. That's the same way that the Texas Department of Criminal Justice calculates recidivism, and we calculated just recently that for the last 3 years, those men who were released in 2008, just under 5% of them recidivated in the period 2009, 10, or 11. That compares to about 24 to 25% for the general population of the state of Texas.
Well, suppose someone wanted to do something like that here in West Virginia. How would you get started?
You need to contact me. We are in the early stages of planning our model for replication of PEP, and I'd be happy to talk to any local group that's genuinely interested and committed to doing that.
Because it sounds like the impact on the community is positive on all levels.
Yeah, it's very positive. Of course, you know, there is no price tag or dollar value you can put on the restoration of these men's lives and the impact that that has on their families. But just in cold, hard dollars, it's quite a boon to taxpayers when you can take a man that's costing the state, you know, $21,000 or so a year to incarcerate and who is, likely to recidivate, and give him sufficient vision, tools, and a network so that he stays out of prison and not only doesn't cost you $21,000 a year, but starts earning money, spending money, and paying taxes every year. It's quite a powerful proposition. We've estimated that just in direct incarceration costs alone, we've saved so far, just in 8 years, we've saved Texas over $30 million. And, you know, that will only grow as we continue to operate.
How much does it cost to run a program like this?
I beg your pardon?
How much does it cost to run a program like this?
Oh, our budget for this year is about $1.9 million, which translates to about $5,000 per participant, considering both the guys we serve inside and those we serve outside.
So you're saving, for those who are inside, it's saving $21,000 a year, costing $5,000 a year. Well, eventually it's going to save $21,000. For the ones who are out, it's saving $21,000. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. But we're spending that money. In addition to the $21,000, we're spending our budget for those guys who are inside.
Who funds it?
So there is some additional investment required for the men inside. And, of course, there's investment in the men outside. We operate three transition homes. We have a staff that helps secure employment opportunities. We have reintegration managers that work with the guys to help them get current identification and clean up any past issues with outstanding law.
Do you only work with men at this point?
At this point, we do. Men represent 90% of the incarcerated population in Texas. So we're kind of trying to deal with the biggest part of the problem first.
Okay, that makes sense. Bert, is there something else you want to share about the program that people should know?
Well, not necessarily that people should know, other than what might be the obvious. This is very much a walk in faith for me, for our entire staff, and our over 1,000 volunteers that are involved with us in any given year. So for all of your listeners, if you could just include us in your prayers, we would greatly appreciate that. For those who are interested, if you would like to read more about us and follow along, you can log on to our website at pep.org, and we would love to have you as followers and supporters.
You say you got started in it on a volunteer basis. Now you're actually running it. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
And how did your faith play into that? Before you answer that, Bert, let me take a second for this request.
If you like this show and want to help us keep it on the air, please send your donation, any amount will help, to Margaret Parker, LC, In His Footsteps Radio, Post Office Box 173, Duck, West Virginia, 25063. Or go online to donate using debit or credit cards, or PayPal, www.inhisfootsteps.com. Thank you for your help keeping us on the air. Now here's Margaret.
If you're just joining us today, Bert Smith of PEP, Prisoner Entrepreneur Program, is explaining this very unique program that helps men who get out of prison and have a hard time finding jobs start their own business or become employed. He's cut the recidivism rate to under 5%, and he's about to share how he went from being a volunteer to running the program and how his faith plays into that.
Well, I felt when I first heard about the program, I'd never been to prison, never had a family member who'd been incarcerated, thankfully, or really never much thought about prisons and prisoners. But I heard this program described, and what appealed to me first was kind of the head part. I'm a taxpayer, and here a portion of my taxes are going to pay to keep these men incarcerated, and it's pretty much a revolving door, and that didn't seem to make a lot of sense. On the other hand, if we can help them become legally and productively employed, well, it's a huge benefit to me as a taxpayer and to them as an individual. So that was the appeal to my head, but there was something that reached into my heart and just spoke to me. And so I volunteered, and I went in thinking that I was going to serve, and of course I was. I've been a committed Christian for all of my life and very involved for at least the last 20 years in various outreach-type ministries. So yes. I went from the mindset really of thinking, well, I'll go in and serve and do my thing. But honestly, what I found when I went in was that I was I was so profoundly and deeply served by these men. Their hope, their determination, their resilience to adverse circumstances and their recovery from serious mistakes and poor decisions that they'd made in their lives. I mean, all of those things I just found so incredibly inspiring. And in addition, just in a purely business context, I heard ideas that were interesting and new and really clever. In other words, there's just a lot of innovative spirit and creativity and energy that's locked up, not just behind those walls physically, but locked up emotionally and culturally within those the men that we seek to serve. And when I saw all of that, well, as you can tell, I'm getting a little excited. I got very excited because the potential that could be realized if we could figure out how to release that innovation and that creative spirit just struck me as wonderful and awesome. And so that's really what captured me and got me involved and kept me coming back. And then when the organization had a need for new leadership, I raised my hand and was called to serve in that new capacity, and it's just it's a wonderful experience for me.
What business were you in before this?
I've done a variety of things. I started professional life as a lawyer doing transactions, buying and selling companies, arranging for investments and things of a corporate nature, and did that for about 10 years, and then went off on my own and started a company in the renewable energy business, pursued that for about a dozen years, was an early stage investor in a DVD rental kiosk business, did a little bit of real estate, did a variety of things.
So you had a background in how to start a business and what goes on in a business and how to run a profitable business. Yes. So that was why you were useful
and
there.
So I had, that's right. I mean, I had some experience, enough experience to know how difficult it is to conceive of a business, start it, and make it successful. And so I had a lot of empathy for these guys. And knowing how hard it is to do without an axe on your back, I just couldn't even imagine how difficult it might be to do it with that big axe on your back. But these guys are tough, and they're smart, and they're determined. And it's just really exciting to see them get out and make and transform their lives, and to feel like they, you know, you're a part of that. It's just really great.
Did you ever hit a point where you just thought, you know what, this is going to fall apart, it's not going to work?
Well, we do have failures. We have guys that that fall off and either commit a new crime and go back to prison, or fail to maintain a high standard of living and get involved again with drugs or alcohol or some other activity which is just destructive. And I try to keep a copy of correspondence I've gotten from men or their family members or employers who are talking about how great the program has been in helping them start a new life. And I just keep copies of those handy. And whenever we get have those bad days, that's the well I go to, and I draw water from that well.
That's a good idea. Anybody could use that idea to keep themselves focused and feeling good when they're feeling discouraged.
Because the big picture is very bright, and there's so much glory, really, to be observed in the work that we're blessed to participate in. But as high as the highs are, the lows are really low, and you just have to find a way to get past that and move on.
A lot of them get jobs rather than start businesses. And what kinds of jobs are you able to help them get? Well, I guess you have to look at what's locally available. I guess that's what it comes down to, huh?
Yeah, you do. And 60% of our guys go to the Houston area, 30% to the Dallas area, and 10% elsewhere. Most of the jobs are going to be entry to just above entry-level positions that involve limited skills. We have a number of guys or skills that require just only a bit of on-the-job training. We give our men so much practice with presentations, presenting their business plans and defending them in a Q&A session where they stand up in front of a panel of four, five, or six free world executives. A lot of the guys get out with pretty polished skills in that type of communication setting. So it's not surprising that a number of them go into sales. Direct sales over the phone or in person.
That sales part kind of surprises me, because I guess I would have been thinking, yeah, fast food, they're going to be stuck behind the counter. But you're saying, no, they have other opportunities available.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, very few of our men go to Flip Burgers.
Bert, we appreciate it. I appreciate you taking the time to share this with me. I know that's going to be useful. Just the idea that you could take someone, as you say, with an X on their back and help them move ahead and get the confidence and the skills they need to not have to go back, to actually have work and be able to move ahead in a positive direction, and the impact that's going to have on their families, their children especially.
And I thank you very much for your interest in our program.
Okay. Thanks, Bert. And I'm looking forward to when you have that model set up so that people can begin to replicate this across the U.S.
Yep. In the meantime, follow us at pep.org.
Okay.
You can find out more about how to have the joy that comes from living each day for God while still keeping up with daily life in the book In His Footsteps, How to Be Happy in Every Situation, available at the website inhisfootsteps.com or online at amazon.com.
You can get more information on our guests and our discussion today, including replays of this show, at inhisfootsteps.com. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Margaret Agard. You can reach me at P.O. Box 173, Duck, West Virginia 25063, or through my website, inhisfootsteps.com. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Be sure to join us next week for more practical tips on living a God-directed life and amazing interviews with people who do.